This is In Our Own Voices, amplifying the LGBTQ plus community. I'm DJ El Toro, one of the program producers, and joining me today is Dr. Eric Plemons, assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Arizona and author of The Look of a Woman, Facial Feminization Surgery and the Aims of Trans Medicine. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you explain to our listeners what facial feminization surgery is and why it's so important to some trans women?
Facial feminization surgery, or FFS, is a set of bone and soft tissue reconstructive surgical procedures that aim to make faces look more feminine. They can be hugely intrusive or just a few interventions, so it doesn't really name a particular set of things so much as a goal of surgical intervention.
What are some popular examples of these procedures?
For example, you could look at the transformations of Caitlyn Jenner's face over the many years, and in her case, you would have seen many slow changes over time, as opposed to some trans women who undergo a really transformative set of procedures all at once. Oftentimes, this includes rhinoplasty, so nose jobs. Mm-hmm. Some of the more dramatic looking or changing interventions are done to the forehead. It really changes the look of a face, but it's also a really radical kind of intervention.
Obviously, sex and gender are two totally different ideas. One is a biological and physiological set of characteristics. The other is a socially constructed idea. But your book is actually arguing that our definition of sex perhaps can change.
Absolutely. And if you look over time, it has changed. One of the ways that it's changed is precisely that you just enumerated this distinction between these two things, which has not always been commonly understood way of dividing up categories of bodies. In the book, it's not just about facial feminization surgery itself, but what they're asking from when they go to the doctor changes because what it means to be sexed or gendered is changing too.
So do you foresee a future as these ideas evolve where perhaps facial feminization surgery will become less popular and less common because people's ideas of what actually constitutes femininity will have evolved?
It's certainly possible. I mean, one thing we know about medicine is it never stays put. And one thing that we know about transgender as a category is that it's never been a stable thing. So these things change all the time. And what it means to be a trans person or to embody femininity is different. And it's not only different in time, but who you are, who your social group is, what you look like before, what you look like afterwards, right? So there's not really a set thing that trans people want from medicine. Mm-hmm. There's not really a set thing that masculinity is or femininity is. My expectation is it will always change, but for whom and how, that's an open question.
Can you talk a little bit about the sort of socioeconomic ramifications of FFS? Because obviously these are not inexpensive procedures.
No, they're massively expensive. In fact, currently FFS is the most expensive surgical intervention that a trans woman might undergo. So the genital surgery often associated with transitioning is significantly less expensive. The socioeconomic factor is a really significant one. And one of the critiques and one of the that I engage in the book that comes from people who are critical of FFS is basically, oh, great. Here we have this already privileged group of people who are generally white, older, in above 40, and resourced, now get to buy their way out of social exclusion. Isn't this wonderful, right? So all of the bodies that were already suspicious because they were bodies of color, because they were poor women, because they had to do sex work and other survival kinds of economies that many people find themselves forced into, those bodies that were already suspicious are rendered even more so by a group of trans women who can buy their way into being recognized as female. So that's a trenchant critique from within trans community that I engage with. But certainly, some of the stories that I tell are about the ways that people found the money to get these things done. So, you know, those who are a part of the socioeconomic group of privilege could cash in their retirement accounts or sell a property or do other kinds of things that resourced people can do. Other people went into significant personal debt to the point of bankruptcy or had parents who cashed in their life insurance policies or other things that are ways of understanding just how important the intervention are to people, but also give you a sense of the sort of economic precarity that's oftentimes involved in procedures when insurance companies have decided they are outside or beyond the pale of what they'll cover.
Was there an inciting incident that inspired you to write this book, something that just compelled you where you were like, I simply must write about this?
Well, I had been interested in a related but very different project, and it happened through a personal friend. I was introduced to Dr. Douglas Osterhout, who's the main sort of character in the book, and who, by the way, has asked me to always use his real name when I talk about him, so I should say that. She, this friend of ours, introduced me to him, and he was very happy to sit and talk with me, and after the first hour in his office, I just thought, I have to tell this story. It's a very compelling set of promises that doctors make. And at the time, I was really skeptical and didn't really know what I wanted to say about it. Over the year and change that I spent working in his office and with another physician, really sort of saw this very rich and complicated set of stories unfolding.
What did you learn about yourself while working on it?
That's a really good question. I learned that surgery is really fascinating to watch. I really enjoyed that aspect of being in the operating room. And I think as a trans person myself, there was something that I was exploring as well about sharing time and listening to and having insights into these kinds of clinicians that provide services that are infrequently provided, to which trans folks then cultivate a very kind of complex relationship. Right. So for some people, doctors like Osterhout and others are amazing, heroic people. People idolize them and say, you know, for example, one of the people I met said, God made a mistake with me and this guy fixed it. Right. So it's a very direct sort of deifying role. And their critics at the same time will say how wonderful that they're getting filthy rich off the needs and emotional hopes of an already marginalized population that is pinning basically their future of happiness on the idea that these surgeries will change their lives. And so to me, to have some proximity to see the complexity of that was really compelling.
You spent several years working on the book. You conducted more than a year's worth of research and case studies, several years writing. What is the state of the conversation right now about FFS? What's the tea?
Well, there's a lot more people writing about it now in terms of surgical literature, which is interesting. And there are new debates opening following the expansion of insurance access for trans folks. One of the issues around insurance access is trying to define, from an insurer's perspective, what transition medicine is. So you can say, for example, we cover transition-related procedures, but what does that mean, right? It's a massive kind of range of things that people might want or not want, and FFS is among those. And so there's an ongoing debate about whether and how to quantify the value of FFS such that it would be legible to an insurer to say, this is good trans medicine or bad trans medicine. And it's been interesting to see how my work has been taken up in some of those conversations to say either FFS is cosmetic or it's not cosmetic, or how can you say something is or is not cosmetic when the very idea of femaleness is bound up with ideas of beauty, that those things are sort of ongoing.
Do you have another big project on the horizon?
I have a couple of things that I'm working on. One of them is looking at how U.S. institutions are trying to respond to a growing demand for trans healthcare. So I have an article coming out now that's looking at the fact that decades of insurance exclusion hasn't only kept trans people out of hospitals, it's also kept surgeons from knowing how to do this work at all. And it's also kept clinical workflows from including the best practices of trans medicine. So just because there's insurance access doesn't mean that access can do anything just yet. And so I'm looking at this lag in between. And I'm also working on a book project on genital injury and rehabilitation.
I will look forward to it, and we will invite you back to join us again.
Terrific.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Eric Plemons, the author of The Look of a Woman, Facial Feminization Surgery and the Aims of Trans Medicine. This has been In Our Own Voices, amplifying the LGBTQ plus community on 91.3 KXCI, Tucson's community radio station.